Welcome to the Object-Oriented UX Podcast, a podcast about tackling complexity head-on, gracefully organizing massive amounts of information, and designing scalable, future-proof, and of course, naturally intuitive object-oriented user experiences. An OUXer is a powerful blend of information architect, business analyst, facilitator, and UX strategist. If this sounds like you or what you aspire to, you are so in the right place. I'm Sophia Prater, UX designer, chief evangelist of Object-Oriented UX, and your host. Let's jump into it. What's up, OUXers? I have officially gone down the rabbit hole, and I wanted to take you with me for this podcast episode. I don't have much of a script. I have actually a very strange script, which is a conversation I had with ChatGPT-4 earlier this week that has been evolving. I've been going in and out of this conversation, and I think this is going to be really important to share with y'all. And so when I say I've gone down the rabbit hole, I mean the AI rabbit hole. And I have been dabbling with ChatGPT for, I don't know, a couple months now, not more than a couple months. I mean, I remember like the first kind of toe in the water of generative AI was with Rick Williams did a happy hour, shout out to Rick, on how to use AI for noun foraging. And I don't think he wasn't, this was like a year ago. So he was using some other tools. I don't even know if it was, you could even consider it AI at that point, because I think this was over a year ago, but basically like automating noun foraging to like pretty much paste in a long multi-page user interview or a set of user interviews and then get it to tell you what the nouns are and actually rank those nouns. So you get kind of the frequency of the nouns too. And it was really eye-opening. And then we all started talking to, well, I started talking to ChatGPT maybe back in like December or something. And it was really cool. And I remember first, like one of the first questions that I asked ChatGPT, I guess it was 3 point something at that point, was what is OUX? And it did not know. It did not get it right. I asked who's the person that has been popularizing OUX, and definitely did not know who I am. But ChatGPT-4 definitely does know this and is giving much better answers. Still, the quality is not 100%. So if you are asking ChatGPT-4 some more detailed questions about OUX, take it with a grain of salt, okay? But it is very, very helpful and much more helpful than it was before. Okay, so I will go ahead and say I'm actually not an early adopter. I have joked in the past that I make a good UX designer because I actually don't love technology. I get very easily annoyed with it. I never have been able to really get into coding. Anything that gets really fiddly, I lose patience very quickly. I am my mother's daughter, and patience has never been my strong suit. I'm one of those more big picture thinkers. I don't really even love messing with pixels. I like messing with sticky notes. I like messing with structure. And, but I absolutely love the work of user experience design, and specifically object-oriented user experience design, because I know technology is not going anywhere, and I love making it more humane and more human. So I actually just love humanity. I love people. And here we are in this very, very technical world, and living in our technology is so much becoming our environment. And so that's why I get really excited about UX. It's not because I love the new. And I actually have a lot of fears about technology, a lot of reservations about technology. I think that we all do. I'm not going to go down the kids these days rabbit hole. But I do really worry about us living in these digital environments. Okay, that's a different episode. I don't have a script, so I'm going to make sure to stay on topic here, because I don't really want to make this too long, because I know I'm going to be doing more episodes on AI. And right now I just kind of wanted to share a little bit about my journey so far and some really, really interesting things that I am discovering about how OUX and the Orca process and AI can work together. So a couple other shout outs I have to give, because like I said, I am not an early adopter and I have officially been like deep in the AI rabbit hole, as in not just dabbling, for like 10 days now. Okay. Maybe 2 weeks. All right. But I've been deep. I've been going like it's my full-time job. Is really learning this. So one big shout out that I want to give is to Carolyn McGuire. She is one of my dear UX friends and has really, she pivoted. She said, this is going to be a big part of my career back in January. So I will link her LinkedIn in the show notes. She is ahead of the game. She is completely dove in and is becoming an expert UX designer, basically an AI designer. And so she's a good friend of mine and we have been chatting about it. And I remember talking to her in January and I was like, all right, like that's kind of an extreme pivot. And I didn't really get it. But just in, you know, being around her and talking to her and seeing the kind of things that she is exploring and building, actually, the amazing things that she's building, I've been paying a little bit more attention. And here's an interesting thing that happened recently. This is kind of, I didn't plan on telling this story, but I think it's interesting. This is like everything, I don't know, I hate the saying that everything happens for a reason, but I have really been working on my intuition for the past couple years, understanding what my intuition is, running my business actually more intuitively and really checking in with my body and seeing where, what the signals are telling me. And as you may or may not know, I postponed cohort 10. I was going to do cohort 10 in the spring and it was feeling like it wasn't the right time. I didn't really understand why. I've done two cohorts a year for the past 3 years. And it just really wasn't feeling the right time. And I felt like I needed some space, some additional space. And I didn't know what that was for. I remember going on a walk in the woods and just coming out and saying, I just can't. And I felt a lot of anxiety over it. I felt like I was going to really disappoint people. But I wanted to trust my intuition on this. So I went ahead and I've postponed it to September. So we're launching September. We're starting September 2nd. We're launching way before that. You can get on the waitlist at oeux.com/waitlist. And hopefully I will see you there. It's going to be an awesome, cohort 10, right? It's going to be a big party. But on the day that I decided to push to cohort to what was I talking about? That I decided to push to September, I also booked a ticket to Mexico City, which is where Carolyn is living right now. She recently relocated from Oaxaca to Mexico City, and I really wanted to visit her there. So I was like, okay, I'm going to book the ticket. I'm going to book 10 days in May and to go visit her. And it was because my schedule had opened up. And I was like, this is just a fun way to spend time with a good friend and explore this amazing country that is our neighbor. And so a week after I booked that ticket, maybe a couple weeks after I booked that ticket, Carolyn, who is running an AI group, an AI, a meetup in Mexico City, messaged me and said, hey, I'm running a panel. I want to run this panel while you're going to be down here. Do you want to join this panel on AI as kind of like the UX designer philosopher? And I was like, sure, I can talk about the philosophy behind it. And I said, sure, because that's what I do. And it also just sounded like a lot of fun. And you may have also heard me talk about forced functions. I talked about this on the User Defenders podcast years ago. This is how I created so many things in my life. So a forced function is basically a self-imposed deadline that you have accountability with. So if you've ever gotten any career coaching from me or asked about like, hey, I want to start public speaking, the advice that I will always give is write the pitch before you write the actual presentation. If you wait for all your slides to be ready, all your talking points to be ready, having it rehearsed and perfect before you actually pitch it, it will never happen, at least for people like me. I need to pitch the thing and then I will figure it out. All right. I will know that I can do it. I will have the confidence that I can do that thing. So this is how my very first OAUX workshop happened. You might know that story. You can get that story in the OAUX launch guide. If you're not already on that, OAUX.com/newsletter, I will send that to you. It's a totally free PDF. So I tell that story in much more detail, but I have in so many ways, this is like one of the best business tips. I didn't expect it to go in this direction. This is what happens when I don't have a script. One of the best business tips that I will give you is create forced functions for yourself. Know that you can do the thing. Know that you're excited about it. You're feeling it. You're feeling the energy of it. And then go ahead and put it on the calendar and put it publicly on the calendar. Okay? So I've done this so many times in my life. The very first cohort of the certification, cohort one, shout out to cohort one, everybody that was in that cohort and signed up. And I told you I didn't have a curriculum. I had a curriculum for the first 2 weeks for a 10-week course. And I knew that I was going to be a good 1 to 2 weeks ahead of y'all creating that curriculum. I had a good, strong outline. I had the pitch. I knew where I wanted to get everybody in that cohort. I knew what point A was and I knew what point B was, but everything in between I had not fully figured out yet. Okay, so when I first filmed the certification, that was for cohort four. Shout out to cohort four, who was basically getting the videos. I was filming those videos the week before, sometimes the day before that they were released, because I told them they were going to have pre-recorded videos and I changed the structure of it. So we were having office hours that were Q&A. So it wasn't just you weren't going to be on 3 hour Zoom calls with me. You were going to have beautiful, nice chunked out videos. And then when we got together live, we were going to be having live Q&A. And that's what we've been doing since. So forced functions, y'all. Anyways, oh my gosh, back to the point. I said yes to this panel and I was like, well, damn, Sophia, you better be able to talk about AI in a month and a half. All right, so I start listening to some podcasts, and there's gonna be lots of shout outs here. Shout out, and I will get all those links in the show notes for all of these great resources that I've been following. Shout out to Patricia Reiners. I have been listening to her podcast on and off throughout the years, but really, really binging her podcast and all of her great AI content. Her podcast is The Future of UX. And she, when this podcast comes out, we are still in early bird for her course, AI for Designers. It's her course. And I have signed up for that. So I think I might have gotten one of the first couple spots. I was like, yes, yes, I will be in that course. So I think it starts on April 15th or April 24th or something like that of 2024. So if you're listening to this live, like really check that out. That would be, I would love some more OAUXers in there. And then that would give us a chance to hang out. So definitely check out her course. I think in USD, it comes in right under $1,000. So for a 6-week course on this stuff, I think that is totally an amazing investment. So that's another kind of force function, all right, like putting my money into this, investing in this and saying, yes, I am going to learn this. So I started listening to her podcast. A couple other things were happening. There were people in the community making OAUX bots. And I just want to shout out to, I think there was more of them, but the ones that I know of, some people that I've gotten to connect with, my dear friend, Jake Zukovsky, who's been on the podcast early on, he just trained a custom GPT on only my launch guide. And it was really freaking good, scary good. And then I will give a shout out to Sabio Lopez. I recently had a conversation with him. He went to one workshop with me and through his notes and through a little bit of training, created also a really amazing bot. And he's been gracious enough to give me the way that he trained his bot to go into the bot that I will be releasing soon, the official bot. That's going to be Zoe, OAUX official. So make sure you're on the newsletter so that you hear about that. She's getting trained up right now. All right. And I'm going to be talking a little bit more about how I'm training her, which that's where things, I hope this has been interesting so far. I think this is all fascinating. But I will be talking to you about how I'm training her using the Orca process. Okay. So, and then I also want to give a shout out to Jim Knox. I got a conversation with him coming up soon, and he's also created a really interesting GPT where you can actually take a screenshot of a UI, and it will reverse engineer it and to find all the attributes for you. So, oh my gosh, if you can think about where noun foraging was when Rick Williams, who was an early adopter and really thinking about how we can use automation, and to now, I really think that was like a year ago. Gosh, time, maybe it was 2 years ago. And to where we are now, where we can take a screenshot of a UI, feed it into a trained chatbot, and it can start giving us, and it can start finding the core content and the metadata and potentially even the nested objects. With a little bit more training, I think it can do that too. And the objects, all right? Actually build out a little object map for you based on a screenshot. I mean, imagine doing that for a bunch of competitors as well as your existing system, just feeding it a bunch of screenshots and it kind of giving you an object map that it then, maybe with some sort of nice plugin to Figma or to Whimsical, we can turn that into an object map that then we can go and start analyzing and use our human minds to say, ooh, that attribute doesn't make sense. That attribute does make sense. This attribute should actually go over here. This attribute is completely irrelevant to our design challenge. And then we go over that, but it creates this really nice starting point. I mean, it's basically what we do manually right now is we take a bunch of screenshots and then I look through those screenshots to find the core content, to find the metadata, to start finding the relationships, right? Do I need to do that manually? Is this actually a really good place for AI to help us out? Okay. So shout out to all of those folks who have kind of been pushing me and being like, Sophia, you need to get on top of this, all right? We want your version that is trained on all of your material. And that is coming, folks. That is coming, okay? So really, really exciting stuff coming down the pipeline. Now, another force function that I have created for myself. So one of that force function was saying yes to that panel where I know that I can be really, really valuable on that panel, but not today, but I will be in a month and a half. Another one is signing up for Patricia's course. Very excited about that. And then another one is I've got an event for y'all on the books. Just released this. This is a OUX happy hour meetup. It is going to be, I am charging for it, but I think I'm charging like $37 for this. I have 2 hours. It's likely going to be longer. And I've already started creating the outline. The outline, you'll see that in the description. It might change by the time you watch this. But the event is, it's very exciting. OUX for AI and AI for OUX. Okay, let me break that down. OUX for AI. Okay, how do we use OUX and the Orca process to create better, stronger, more ethical artificial intelligence? Okay, there is a lot to that. Okay, there's a lot to that. All right, we can actually use the Orca process to train our artificial intelligences, to actually go in and for those agents, make them more ethical, to really use this framework to look at all the relationships and look at all the metadata and start tagging what needs to be private, what is sensitive. If we're creating a recommendation engine here through the connection of these two things, what kind of biases are we introducing? So it gives us a framework to look at all the little pieces and potential considerations of all those pieces. Really, really exciting stuff. And then on the flip side, we have AI for OUX, what I was just talking about. How do we use AI? Not just maybe for noun foraging and language foraging of a large set of screens. What are some other ways we can actually leverage these tools to make ourselves better designers, specifically make ourselves better OUXers. Okay, and when these things come together, that is exciting stuff. So I put 2 hours. I think that this is probably gonna be longer. You know how I roll if you've ever been to any events. You usually get some bonus content because I just keep going. So I might even end up adjusting it to like 2.5 hours or 3 hours because I already have so much to talk about. Okay, and I'm really, like I said, I'm only really 10 days in to this deep, deep rabbit hole. I haven't even taken Patricia's course yet. Okay, so this, did I give a date? It's going to be on May 16th. So about a month from now, okay, which is going to really evolve my thinking. Basically, I'm going to be going deep in this and creating a new set of frameworks. I think that's what's going to happen on how we massage our existing Orca framework if we are creating an AI agent. Okay. So that is going to be on May 16th. I will put that link as well in the show notes. So, oh my gosh, what are we going to, what you need to look at the show notes for is Patricia Reiner and her course and her podcast, as well as Carolyn McGuire and her LinkedIn and what she's doing. Definitely follow her for all the goodies on AI. And then also I want you to take a look at the event that I have coming up on the 16th, which is going to be so, so fun. All right. And I just promise you it is going to be, there is going to be zero fluff in here. We're going to go straight into it. Okay. So back to like the conversation I had with ChatGPT. I want to talk to y'all about world models. Have you heard of world models? Okay. Let's talk about world models and how this all fits in. So I'm going to be reading, I hate reading out loud. I'm going to do my best to read and kind of summarize some of the things that ChatGPT was saying to me and what I was saying to ChatGPT. And hopefully I'm not going to stumble over myself too much and this will continue to be interesting. Okay. So the first thing that I want to, I'm just going to go through this conversation. Okay. So the first thing I asked is, can you explain reinforcement learning, world models, and generative AI like I'm in sixth grade? Love that prompt for ChatGPT. Sure, let's explain these concepts in a simple way, says ChatGPT. Reinforcement learning. Imagine you're playing a video game where you have to find treasure while avoiding obstacles. Each time you play, you try different paths and remember which ones helped to get you to treasure quickly and which ones didn't. Over time, you get really good at finding the best path to the treasure. This is similar to how reinforcement learning works. It's like teaching a computer to play a game by letting it try many times and learn from its successes and mistakes to get better at the game. Okay, so when, I don't know if you remember when we had an AI beat the world champion of Go. Correct me if I'm wrong, y'all. That was reinforcement learning. Okay, that's what, probably a combination of reinforcement learning and something else, but that was mainly reinforcement learning. All right, world models. Reading from ChatGPT again. Now, think about how you use your imagination to plan a route in a maze before you actually start walking. You imagine where the walls are and think about the best path to take. World models in AI are like this imagination. They help the computer make a little model or a map inside its brain about the world, like a game or a real life situation, looks like and how things in that world work. This way, the computer can think ahead and make smart choices without having to actually try everything in real life. Generative AI. Let's say you have a box of colored pencils and you decide to draw a picture of a house, but you make up your own new house design. Generative AI is similar. It's like a computer program that can create things like pictures, music, or stories after learning about many examples. If you show it lots of pictures of houses, it can learn what houses look like and then draw new house pictures all by itself, even though it has never seen these new houses before. Okay, and this gets into instances. Feeding the system instances of a thing to teach it about what that thing is. So Zoe is getting fed lots and lots of images of object maps and junction objects and system models so that she can learn what a junction object is, what an object map is, and what a system model is by seeing lots and lots of examples. Thus, she can then create her own. Zoe is my AI. I think I mentioned that. Okay. Hopefully it's obvious where I'm speaking and where ChatGPT is speaking. I'll try to get better about that. Okay. ChatGPT says, putting it all together. So reinforcement learning is about learning from trial and error. World models are like using imagination to plan ahead. And generative AI is about creating new things based on what it has learned. Each of these things help computers do tasks better, whether playing games, planning strategies, or making art. So, my response. Okay, great. Is it fair to say that using this combined approach, an AI can create an understanding of the world through understanding what the objects are in that world, how they relate to each other in the context of a particular world, what those objects can do and what other objects can do to them, and what properties or attributes an object might have. It's fine to contradict me. Okay, that's another prompt. Side note, that's another prompt that's what I'll say. I'll say side note, okay, to know that I'm commenting on this conversation. So side note, I love that prompt as well. It's fine to contradict me. I feel like I get more balanced answers because I was seeing that whatever I would put in, it would find a way to kind of agree with me in some way. So I've been doing that. I feel like that kind of gives me more balanced answers, especially when I'm suggesting something like this. Okay, ChatGPT. Yes, you've outlined a very insightful way of thinking about how an AI can understand the world through the lens of world models. Your description aligns well with the goals and mechanisms of such models in AI research. Let's break down each point. Thank you, ChatGPT. Thank you for telling me. That was so insightful. Okay, 4 points here. All right, that align directly to the ORCA process. Okay, 1, understanding what objects are in the world. AI, through observation and interaction, learns to identify and categorize objects. This is similar to how a child learns to differentiate between a cat and a dog by noticing features and behaviors. In AI, this process often involves a lot of data and complex algorithms that help the system recognize patterns and categorize objects accordingly. Okay, side note, this is something that I've been thinking about for so long, y'all. I've been thinking about this maybe 5 or 6 years. I remember, I think it was probably when I got my first Alexa. And I was trying to get it to add a song to a playlist. I was listening to Spotify and it didn't know how to do it. And I was like, oh my gosh, it doesn't really understand what a song is. It doesn't really understand what a playlist is. It doesn't understand what a list is. And then there's playlists and wish lists and like Amazon, like my Amazon wish list, hello. Like without being kind of hard coded, right? It doesn't really understand the concepts. And I was like, oh my gosh, we need to train our robots like we train our kids. And I talk about this a whole lot about the psychology of OUX is this is how we talk to our kids. When we're trying to teach language to kids, we're saying, that's a duck and that's a pond and that's a tree and that's a big tree and that's a little tree. We don't start with the verbs. And Jean Piaget talks about this in his way of basically the grandfather of child psychology talks about this in his tiers of how a child learns to understand the world, it starts with understanding those objects. They don't have a whole lot of procedures in the beginning. So I was really excited to hear this. Yes. What if we were training our AI kind of like we train a person? All right. Maybe it's not a kid, but like a new hire. Like, can we think of like when we're making a generative AI agent, like a custom GPT, to kind of train them like we're training a new hire? And a great way to train a new hire, this has been mentioned in so many podcasts. I'll shout out to Chase Roberts from Chewy. I think he really highlighted this about how he actually uses the ORCA process he used it when he started at Chewy.com to understand how Chewy.com worked and also even how the organization worked. And so many people have said that the object guide is one of the best ways to onboard a new hire. Give them the object guide. Here's all the things. And then teach them how to read an object map. And then it's like x-ray vision. They can see, oh, okay. And this is why when I do consulting calls, I can get on and I can be looking at something that I know nothing about. And I can look at their object map that I'm going to be trying to help them work through. I can look at that object map and I can start getting their industry. Because it's this x-ray vision and having an object guide, some people have sent me an object guide before the call for me to look through the object guide. So I'm just up to speed. Can we feed our AIs object guides to say, this is what this thing is in this context? That's what's really exciting. What's up, OUXers? There is something very important that I have neglected to do in the first 50 episodes of this podcast, and that is to implore you, dear listener, for a review. So here I am, asking ever so nicely for you to drop a rating and review of the OUX podcast into either Apple Podcasts or Spotify. This can really help us spread the OUX love. So if you've gotten any value from OUX and the Orca process, which I'm assuming you have since you're here, I'd be so appreciative for a few minutes of your time. Okay, so how to do this? Don't actually go click on the rating metadata because that would be way too intuitive. On Apple Podcasts, go to the podcast detail page, scroll to the bottom, and you'll see some big stars down there that you can add stars. And then underneath that, there is another little link that says create a review. So that would be amazing. And on Spotify, you've got to do this on the mobile. On Spotify mobile, go to the three-dot menu on that detail page and hit rate. And actually on Spotify, even on an episode detail, you can leave a comment there too. If you scroll down the episode detail, there'll be something that says something like, how did you like this episode? And feel free to put your thoughts there. Thank you so much and happy OUXing. Okay, number two, ChatGPT says, understanding how objects relate to each other. This involves learning the relationship and interaction between objects. For example, an AI might learn that a cup can sit on a table but will fall if it's not supported. This understanding of spatial and causal relationships is crucial for navigating and manipulating environments, whether physical or virtual. Amen, ChatGPT. Okay, number three, understanding what objects can do and what can be done to them. CTAs, capabilities. This is about understanding the actions that can be performed by or on objects. For example, an AI learns that a door can be opened or closed and that the action changes the state of accessibility between spaces. Cool. That was a side note. This knowledge is essential for planning and executing actions to achieve goals. All right. Four, understanding the properties or attributes of objects. The A of Orca. This involves recognizing characteristics like size, shape, color, and material. These attributes can significantly affect how objects are used or interacted with. For instance, knowing that ice is slippery or that glass is fragile, informs how an AI might handle these materials. Okay. In essence, by using a combined approach of reinforcement learning, world models, and generative AI to build world models, an AI can indeed develop a comprehensive understanding of its environment. It does so by learning to identify objects, understanding their properties and the rules that govern their interactions, and simulate potential actions and outcomes in its internal model of the world. This holistic understanding enables the AI to interact with its environment in a meaningful and effective way, akin to how humans use their understanding of the world to navigate daily life. So, your summary is quite apt. Thank you, ChatGPT. World models aim to equip AI with a structured and nuanced understanding of its surroundings, including the objects, their properties, the actions those objects can perform or have performed on them, and how they all interrelate within the context of that specific world. Ah, cool. All right, my response. Thank you. I am so curious about how a UX designer designing for AI plays a part in this. Let's say the designer is designing an AI agent that helps diagnose problematic cat behavior and provide recommendations. Shout out to my girl, Allie O. Fisher. This was her design challenge when she was getting certified, but it was all screen-based, right? Okay, so back to the script. As the designer, it would be helpful for me to train the AI in making sure it understands the basics of the objects, cats as pets, not wild animals, owners, behaviors, treatments, medications, incidents, etc., how they relate to each other, making sure the AI understands that a cat can have many problematic behaviors, that behaviors might be related to each other, right? What the owner can do to each of these objects, that's also important. And also making sure that the AI is considering attributes. For example, cats can have breed, age, and gender that might be relevant to diagnosing the problematic behavior. A behavior might also have severity, maybe even priority set by the user. So these are the three things that my cat is doing wrong, and this going outside of the litter box is my number one priority of fixing.
I don't know.
Is the role of a human UX designer in AI to help train the AI on these aspects of the world it is operating in? Again, feel free to disagree and tell me where the human would be more useful in designing really amazing AI agents. ChatGPT responds, your perspective on the role of a UX, user experience, designer in shaping AI, particularly for an application like diagnosing problematic cat behavior, is both insightful and on point. Thank you, ChatGPT. The UX designer's role is indeed crucial in ensuring the AI understands the specific context in which it operates, including the nuances of objects like cats, owners' behaviors, and their interrelations. Let's delve in to how a UX designer can contribute to creating effective AI agents and where their focus can be most beneficial. Training the AI on the basics of the world. Point one, defining the domain. A UX designer can help define the scope of the AI's knowledge and operations, ensuring it understands the domain-specific entities, cats, owners, behaviors, etc. This involves specifying the kinds of objects the AI will encounter and ensuring it recognizes these objects correctly within the context of diagnosing cat behavior. Is your mind blown as much as me? My mind is really blown by this. I hope you're still here. I hope you're still listening. Okay. All right. Clarifying relationships. By mapping out how different entities relate to each other, for example, the connection between the specific behaviors and underlying health issues, UX designers guide the AI's understanding of complex interactions. This is crucial for developing an AI that can accurately diagnose issues based on observed behaviors and contextual information. Setting actionable insights. The UX designer plays a key role in ensuring the AI not only diagnoses, but also provides actionable recommendations. This involves training the AI to understand what interventions, like treatments or changes in the cat's environment, might be effective for specific behaviors, considering the cat's individual characteristics, age, breed, etc. And this is another side note, like training also on the attributes of the owner and asking attributes, like, can we train it to say for the owner, we need to say like how much time, like do you work from home? Do you not work from home? Is the cat left alone? Is it not left alone? What is your budget, right? Like what kind of budget considerations do we need to think about when we're thinking about these interventions, right? Are there other cats? Like just knowing to ask these questions, right? So how much can we train the AI to be thinking about these things? I use the term loosely. I'm doing air quotes, thinking about these things. There's been actually a lot of air quotes here that you haven't been able to see, like, you know, understanding and brain. I don't know. I might not give it another year. Maybe I won't be using those air quotes anymore. Okay. Considering attributes and behaviors. Incorporating detailed attributes. And again, we're still talking here about how the human UX designer can help make better AI from the voice of ChatGPT. Considering attributes and behaviors. Incorporating detailed attributes. The UX designer ensures that the AI considers relevant attributes of cats, breed, age, and gender, and behaviors, frequency, severity. This level of detail is essential for nuanced understanding and accurate diagnosis. User priorities and customization. Designing the AI to allow users, cat owners, to set priorities or customize inputs. For example, focusing on certain behaviors or specifying particular concerns enhances the relevance and effectiveness of the AI's recommendations. The human touch, where UX designers shine. Empathy and understanding. A UX designer brings empathy. So now we're kind of departing a little bit from the Orca process. And this is where I'm going to be actually hooking this back into the Orca process. Okay, empathy and understanding. A UX designer brings empathy to the design, ensuring the AI communicates in a way that is comforting and understandable to worried pet owners. This involves careful consideration of the user interface and the AI's language and tone. Okay, great other consideration. We can actually even, UX writers and content designers have been using the Orca process for this. So this is a great other way to think about, for example, certain attributes can have, by the way, this is a side note, certain attributes can have a little bit of a different voice and tone. Like, for example, a recommendation can speak one way while potentially asking questions about the you know, detailed follow-up questions about the behaviors can be spoken about in a slightly different tone of voice. Okay, so we can actually attribute tone to various attributes, whether they're being and how the ChatGPT is delivering those. Okay, got it out. All right. Point two of three. Ethical and practical considerations. Designers must navigate ethical considerations, for example, privacy concerns, accuracy of diagnoses, and practical aspects, usability, accessibility, to ensure that AI serves its intended purpose without causing undue distress or misunderstanding. The privacy concerns is definitely one that we'll be talking about in May during my session about at an attribute by attribute level, and also the content strategy on feeding the knowledge base, like actually OUXing your content strategy around the knowledge base and what pieces are private, what pieces need attribution. So much that we can do here as we're creating the strategy to create a more ethical AI agent. Continuous learning and adaptation. That's point three. Again, that was another side note. Hopefully you're following this. What's in my voice and what's ChatGPT? All right, point three from ChatGPT, continuous learning and adaptation. Part of the designing of an effective AI involves creating mechanisms for feeding and continuous learning. UX designers can help set up systems that allow the AI to learn from user interactions, improving its accuracy and helpfulness over time. Now, for me, yes, user interactions for sure. So how we can actually create better ideas of some of these objects. The other thing that I think is really interesting here about continuous learning is also how changes in the knowledge base get updated. Because right now, depending on what system you're using, there's a lot of things that I'm diving into with, for example, the API assistant. So, and also actions, custom actions within ChatGPT, a custom GPT, where we can get more dynamic data. I'm also looking into Zapier Central. I think that they're doing a whole lot better with tables. And then also, actually, I'll give a shout out to Searchy, where we host our videos. So like the content strategy around what is static and what is dynamic and how things get updated is incredibly important. So for example, if I'm creating an OUX sales bot and it's trained on, let's say, a PDF of all my pricing, and then I change that, like I need to make sure that there's a system there to re-upload that PDF, because like right now at the point of this recording, that's kind of where I'm at. Now there's probably better ways to do this. Like, can I have a database in, let's say, Notion or Airtable that I can update the prices, and that it sends a zap, or there's an API call that then it goes and it continuously updates the AI, right? The agent, so that it's getting the accurate prices. Okay, so as we're designing these things, there's a huge piece on the content strategy and the maintenance plan behind the knowledge base and how it's being trained for that continuous learning and adaptation. So adaptation from the user, but also from the business side of it. Okay, so I didn't want to make this too long, but we're getting there. We're getting to long, aren't we? So I wanted to talk a little bit about how I am training Zoe. And this, I'm going to be going into a lot more detail on this and lots of other aspects, like really showing how I'm doing the content strategy. Actually, most of you, like if you are going to start getting into this, which I highly recommend, and starting to design the solutions that you're designing are based in AI. There's probably going to be multiple bots too for different functions. So even as a small business, I've identified four that I'm going to need. With different privacy, it's kind of like there's the corpus of knowledge, and then what pieces are private, what pieces, like one of those bots is going to be an internal bot, right? So it's going to be trained on a lot more information that's actually private information. Then there's also a bot that's going to be more of a librarian bot for people that are in the self-paced masterclass. It's going to get them to the right content and actually provide references to the content, okay, and actually link them to the right content. Okay, so there's going to be at least four that I've identified, okay, as a small business. So we already are starting to get some cardinality there of many-to-many relationships between, okay, for me, which bot has access to which information, Okay, which, I mean, literally, like, which folders, which databases, which PDFs, right, are these different bots getting trained on? For example, something that I ran into recently with the bot that I'm hosting on with Searchy, which is, like, the one thing that Searchy does really, really well. So I started using them because they have a great video player and great transcripts. So in the self-paced masterclass, all those videos are hosted with Searchy, and the videos that you see there where you can search the transcripts, and just like a really, really nice video player, that's all housed in Searchy. They introduced Searchy Wisdom, which you can't train a Searchy Wisdom bot, at least not yet at the time of this recording. But what it does do really well is it gives references and actually gives you the timestamp, and you can go to the exact point in the video where I explain junction objects, right? Or whatever it is that you're querying. So it's really good for question and answer and getting people to the right video so they can get the answer and then they can go watch the video on it or go see the podcast, go to like literally the timestamp in the podcast. So really freaking cool there. But one thing that I accidentally did in the very beginning is I uploaded the entire folder that I had of one-on-ones. All right, I had a lot of recordings of one-on-ones. And I didn't realize that it was giving the references. I had to go turn that off because I made it public. And I realized, ooh, one-on-ones, I might train another bot on the one-on-ones because it's going to, and I might even say, like, never use real names here, like scrub all the data so that it's also, it's going to be just make, for example, Zoe a whole lot smarter. Zoe is going to be the super expert, okay? But I'm calling my librarian one. She's going to be Libra. So Libra over here, I don't want to train her on those one-on-ones because I don't want her surfacing the one-on-ones because that's a privacy concern. I didn't tell those. I'm not going to – I mean, I might, but, like, I'm not going to reach out to everybody and say, hey, like, is it okay that people see our one-on-ones? Like, I don't think so. I think most of those answers are going to be no. People are not going to want that. Even our OUX office hours from previous cohorts, like, those feel private, all right? When it's other people's faces in there, I don't want them – I don't want – Libra, my librarian, who's giving references and showing the videos, to be trained on that. Yet Zoe can be trained on that. So this is this really interesting content strategy that I am using OUX and the Orca process to map out all this complexity, to basically create my plan of what documents and what knowledge is what, you know, who's getting what, basically. So that's something that we're definitely going to be talking more on the 16th about, how to kind of like OUX your content strategy around building out these bots. Okay, that's going to be more in the OUX for AI section. All right, I want to go back to kind of what we were talking about before. I went down another little rabbit hole because I'm just so, you can't tell, I'm just so jazzed about this stuff. I'm so excited to talk to you more about this and like give a really, really amazing training in mid-May. But I wanted to go over how I'm thinking about the Orca process and how we can train our AIs. Okay, there's definitely the content strategy piece. What I find really interesting is that how do we train the AI on what the objects are? Like really give it a sense of what, in my example, this is super meta, y'all. Okay, so stay with me. In my world, like I need Zoe to understand what a card is. Like if I just say card right now, because she, and I'm going to use she, I am personifying these, my little assistants. So Zoe, she needs to understand what a card is in the context of OUX, like what we mean when we say card and detail and list, because those can mean a whole lot of things in a wider context. All right, I need her to understand what an object guide is and what the structure of an object guide is and what sections of an object's guide I always recommend and what sections of the object guide are kind of like, you know, more at your disposal, right, and more customizable. I want Zoe to understand what a nav flow is. Like, what does a nav flow look like? What makes a good nav flow and what makes a not so good nav flow? Obviously, she needs to understand what an object map is, what a system model is. All these things in the OUX world needs to be defined in context. And so you know what a really good tool for that is an object guide. So I'm like, this is going to be actually so great for y'all too, to just have an object guide of all of the things. I have a glossary, but an object guide for each of the objects in the OUX process. Like, oh my gosh, snake eating its tail. Am I right? Or even sketches. What are OUX style sketches? What do those look like? Okay. what makes a good quality, like talking about black boxing nested objects. Like, can it give advice on that and be like, oh, hey, like you don't need to. Okay. All right. Are you feeling me now? Relationships. Okay. So I also need Zoe to understand, for example, like a design challenge can have mini object maps based on role or prioritization or phase. I want Zoe to understand that a design challenge usually has one to many user roles that can be helped, that will be helped by the solution to this challenge. All right. So sometimes there's just one user role, but I want Zoe to understand and kind of prompt people to say, oh, are there any, but like, is there an admin that you're designing for? Is there a customer service representative that you're designing for? To help people expand their thinking around who might be using a certain system. Okay. A card has one object, right? That's very important. A card is only for one object. An object has many cards, usually 3 to 5. Those cards, like, and then understanding what a shapeshifter is. How do we, like, where is good shapeshifting? Where is bad shapeshifting within those cards? Okay, an object has one detail page, usually, right? Best practices one. Here's some maybe edge cases. But in all that cardinality, I can go into, I think, my cat saving fire department. I mean, at least the mechanics, right? And dependency is going to be really, really important. So if somebody deletes an object from their system, it needs to understand probably we're going to need to delete all those cards, details, and lists from our design system. Calls to action. All right. So I need to let Zoe know what, as a bot, what she can do and what she needs to expect her human clients to do to these objects. Okay, so your client can ask to, you can, your client can create a design challenge, can give you a design challenge, okay? You can ask for clarification. You probably should ask for clarification on that design challenge. There's other things that you can do from a design challenge. You can create a summary of that design challenge, all right? You can elaborate on that design challenge. Now, some of these things the generative AI will already be able to do, but I want to give Zoe direction on that. What does it look like to ask for clarification on a design challenge? What pieces should she recognize are missing, all right, to kind of like promote better design, right? Where should she even push back on a design challenge and say, you really don't have enough information here. Like, I'm going to need a little bit more. I can train Zoe to do that. And by thinking through the Orca process, that's actually helping me create my training plan. Like, this is creating a training plan, basically. There's all the knowledge base that's going to be fed in. And then there's that prompt engineering, right? Of figuring out how do I train? And I'm definitely going to be looking more and more into prompt engineering. But I think that through the O's, the R's, the C's, and the A's, I know that through the O's, the R's, and the C's, the A's, we can create a framework for really, really nice prompt engineering. Okay, attributes. What is the structure of all these things? What does your client need to provide to you to communicate one of these things? And what should you provide to spit back one of these things? Okay, so what does an object map, like, what is the structure of an object map? Right? Are there other potential structures of an object map? Is there the table structure of an object map that you can download as a CSV? Is there an image structure of an object map? Is there kind of like our classic sticky note structure? But then there's also like, so this gets into like even visualizations. But for example, a design challenge, here are the must-have pieces of a design challenge. We need to have business goals. We need to have user goals. We need to have a general design vision. Okay. What is the structure of an Orca sprint? All right. Where is that malleable? Okay. Because an Orca sprint has a structure, but of course, y'all know how I roll. It's incredibly flexible. All right. So where can I train Zoe on an Orca sprint so she knows this is what it is, like in its kind of, you know, canonical state. And here's the wiggle room around that structure. I need to do that. Like, now there's certain things that I can feed of just how I've been talking about. You know, it doesn't have to be structured, right? Like, I think it's this kind of combination of all the unstructured training of just all of these feeding it all the podcast scripts, right? Feeding it the entire masterclass. It. Oh, Zoe, I'm sorry. I called her it. I don't know why I want to say she. I don't know. I'm personifying her. I personify everything. I personify like my vacuum cleaner. So she needs to really understand what an Orca sprint is. From that, she can do that again, like from the kind of pulling out and making sense of all the things I've ever said and, you know, what people have said in certification, office hours and one-on-ones and piece it all together. But I also kind of want to be deliberate and give Zoe some structure too. Now, some of that might come out, but then I'm going to probably want to tweak it. And I want to make sure that she understands the structure, which right now, even from being trained on everything, she does not. Okay. So I was asking her to create an outline for a 3-day Orca sprint. Couldn't do it. She wanted to do Monday through Friday because that's all she knew, is that it has to be Monday through Friday, because I haven't done a lot of talking and I haven't actually shown that it can be a 2-day. You can have a 2-day Orca sprint. You can have a 10-day Orca sprint. So feeding really great examples and instances and actually structuring those examples and instances through the A of the Orca process. Okay, y'all, thank you for listening to this. This was a little bit of word vomit. I really, really hope this was helpful and inspirational. Before I close up, I'm just going to give a little bit more information about the event that I've got coming up. So we will put the link in the show notes. That is going to be on May 16th, 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Maybe 6 p.m. ish. Don't plan anything afterwards, I'll say, or you'll get the recording. Again, like if you're not available during that time, please go ahead and sign up. Again, it's only, I've already signed up, so I can't see the price. I think I put $37 on there. You'll get the recording for it. And it's going to be super, super valuable, I promise. So here's what the outline is as of now. And if anything, it's just going to grow and refine. So how can OUX help you design and build better AI? So planning your knowledge base, which we talked about. We're going to also go into OUX and structured content for training your agent. So making sure your data is really clean to feed into it. And then OUXing the user inputs and agent outputs. So this is kind of this new paradigm of UI. How do we start OUXing that user interface? Okay, and then on the flip side, how can you use AI agents to enhance and speed up your OUX work? Okay, so we are going to go beyond the obvious here. We're going to talk about the best prompts for using ChatGPT for OUX research. We're going to talk about my favorite AI agents to plug into your process. And you're going to get access to Zoe, the official OUX bot, which can answer all your questions 24/7. And likely by this point will be pretty dang good at creating some starter object maps for then you to go and pull into another program and actually use your lovely human brain to actually make them make more sense in whatever context you're working in. So my goal here is in just a couple hours to really just diffuse a lot of overwhelm if you are feeling overwhelmed by this, and show you just how to seamlessly integrate AI into this really, you know, a really effective process. I don't plan to present any slides. I might, though. I'm going to show you exactly what I am doing, the tools I'm using, the experiments I'm running. We're going to be looking at my Whimsical boards, my Notion databases, and the back end of all of these new bots. So I'm just going to be showing you. It's going to be a lot of like, this is what my process has been. I am going to start off likely with some OUXing of this world to help us understand the world better. Like, kind of like, you know, I was breaking down what the difference between reinforcement learning and machine learning and generative AI are, but also like, what is an action when we're talking about this? What is a prompt actually? Prompt can be used in multiple different ways. That is, that we're our language is actually not great around this. So what are actions? What are prompts? What are bots? What are tools? We might even think about what's an API in this context. So a little bit of OUXing of this world so that we can get a really nice foundational understanding. So that's probably gonna be like my intro, and then we'll go into all these juicy points, which I am just so excited about. So hope to see you in there. It's gonna be really, really fun. Again, that is May 16th, 3 to 5 p.m. Y'all, thank you for listening. Happy OUXing, happy AIing, and come on with me. Let's hold hands going into this brave new world. All right, cheers, y'all. Thank you so much for listening. I truly hope you enjoyed this episode. Please visit objectorientux.com/podcast for show notes. Our soundtrack is Fighter by Ruby Vell, courtesy of Sugaroo Records. Happy OUXing!